Gamay had been listening intently to the discussion. "We've talked about the transmission of these waves into solid ground or the atmosphere. What would happen if you sent them into the bottom of the sea?"
Hibbett spread his palms wide apart. "I don't have a clue. Ocean geology isn't my area of expertise."
"But it is mine," Paul Trout said. "Let me ask you a question, Al. Could amplified electromagnetic waves penetrate deep into the Earth's crust?"
"Without question."
"In that case, it's possible that the transmissions could cause some anomalies in the Earth's mantle in roughly the same way the military experiments you talked about disturb the atmosphere."
"And what sort of anomalies?" Adler asked.
"Whirlpools and eddies, possibly."
"Could these create disturbances in the sea?" Austin asked.
Hibbett pinched his chin.
"The swirling molten layer under the crust is what creates the magnetic field that surrounds the Earth. Any disruption of the field has the potential to cause all sorts of disturbances."
Professor Adler pounded his fist on the table.
"I knew I was right. Someone has been monkeying around with my ocean."
"But we're talking about vast distances and miles of surface material," Trout said, temporarily squelching Adler's exuberance. "My sense of this discussion is that it's going back to Joe's big spark plug or Al's coil. Even if the device turned out enormous power, it would still be puny compared to the mass of the Earth."
Austin broke the brief silence that followed Trout's evaluation. "What if there were more than one device?"
He pushed the laptop to the center of the table and slowly spun it around so everyone could see the blip surrounding the disturbed area. Trout grasped the significance right away. Four ships, each concentrating its power on a small area, and that might work. Austin nodded. "I'll show you something else that's interesting." He called up the image taken shortly after the bell sank. "My guess is that one of these ships became a victim of the sea disturbances it created."
"That might explain how," Zavala said. "What I can't figure is why."
"Before we answer that question," Austin said, "maybe we should concentrate on who. This isn't a case of someone making waves in a bathtub. Nameless and faceless people have gone to a great deal of trouble and expense to stir up the ocean. They have killed the crews of two ships that we know of, and caused the loss of millions of dollars in property in their quest for some nameless goal." He looked around the table. "Are we all ready to get down to work?"
Austin turned to Hibbett. "We need your expertise in electromagnetism, Al. It would be a great help if you could see from a technical point of view if these pipe dreams have any basis in reality. Where can we learn more about the Kovacs theorems?"
"My best advice is to go right to the source. The research in this country was done in Los Alamos. There's even a Kovacs society out there that's a repository for his work and documents. I've contacted them from time to time with questions."
Austin turned to Adler. "Could you work with Al and come up with a paper?"
"Joe, building a fleet of floating power plants is a pretty big deal. Those dynamos were probably commercially built. I'll see if I can come up with a point of origin," Zavala said.
"We could be in New Mexico this afternoon and back here tomorrow," Gamay said.
Austin nodded. "Find out how far those experiments went and if they're still going on. We'll work up everything ever written about Kovacs. Maybe we'll find a nugget that will make it worth our while." He thanked everyone for coming and suggested they meet the same time the next day. He and Zavala would get together in a few hours at NUMA headquarters.